from NPR is made possible in part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's programming is made possible in part by Ratio Severance Reed Architects, Designers, and Planners, dedicated to distinctive projects for communities and workplace clients, on the web at www.ratioarchitects.com.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in this afternoon. On the program today, it's Computers and You. We welcome back to the program science and technology reporter for the News Gazette, Greg Klein. Listeners, you can join us with your questions about computers. Here are the telephone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Welcome back. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Celeste. It's good to be here.
Yeah. No one's waiting at the moment to talk with us. So what would you like to talk about before we talk with some listeners? What's on your mind?
Well, I might talk a little bit about blogging or doing weblogs because it's something that I've taken up recently in the last couple of weeks, and I've been messing around with it, and I'm finding it kind of an enjoyable and cathartic pastime. Now I see why there are so many of them out there. So I suppose what I'd do is encourage people who are interested in doing this to take a look at it. And you might go to Google and click on their extra features link there, and they have a blogging service they actually bought that they call Blogger now, where you can start one of these for free. And essentially what it is, it's just kind of an online journal of things you might want to write about. In my particular case, I happen to have kind of a side passion in jazz music, and so I write about jazz CDs on my blog. But people are writing about all kinds of topics. It's really kind of a fun thing to do.
Now, how do we find your blog?
Well, I'll get the address here and give it to you before give it out before the end of the show.
Okay, sounds good. Well, I know that a lot of our listeners are interested in jazz as well, and mm-hmm. that'd be a fun thing to talk about online. We have a listener now waiting to talk with us on the toll-free line 4. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for this program. I enjoy it. I hope I have a question of maybe a little bit of general interest. I'm working with several computers, and my newest one has a new version of Microsoft XP, and I'm using Excel, and I'm just new to creating the rewritable disk, where I've created programs on Excel and saved them to the disk, and I get along okay, but then I moved that to another one of my computers that's also running XP and an older version of Excel, and it will read the disk, but when I try to make changes on my program and then save it, it says I don't have access, see your computer administrator. Well, there is no computer administrator. I'm a self-employed person, and it's just me. And also, when I load it at the top of the blue bar at the top, after the name of the program, it said write only. So right off from the bat, it sensed something was different. And that part about seeing your computer administrator and how to change things, I operate without passwords to get into my computers.
Mm-hmm. Now, so you've got one computer. It's running Windows XP.
It's a new Dell.
Uh-huh.
And it's running I bought the bought it all installed and then a real updated version of Microsoft Excel. And I've transferred information on floppy disk back and forth, and I get along fine. It warns me when I go to save on a floppy from an older version that it may be some changes that would be lost, and I click OK and go ahead. So I get along fine. I use floppies a lot. But on these new RW rewritable CDs, the new computer does okay creating it and everything, and I can re-access it. But when I try to switch it between computers, it senses something is different in the older computer.
Now, sir, let me ask you a couple things to try to ratchet in on this here. So you've got the one computer. It's a new computer running Windows XP.
Correct.
And this is something you're doing. We're talking about in Excel now, right?
I'm creating my own spreadsheet.
Right.
Yes.
So you make a spreadsheet in Excel. You got a spreadsheet file.
Mm-hmm.
And you burn that to a writable CD.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
And so now you take it to your other computer. And you put that in your other computer.
And it'll read it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, what's your what system is your other computer running?
It's Windows XP.
Okay.
With an older version of Excel.
So you can look at the spreadsheet, but then...
And I can make changes on it.
Uh-huh.
But I can't save the changes.
But you can't save the changes.
It
right.
tells me then, at the top in the blue bar, it says write only, and I get that
right.
message about... You don't have access to this folder or file. See your computer administrator, and that it's just frustrating.
Now, when you say you open those files on the other computer and you're making changes and you mm-hmm. try to save them, have you moved the files from the disk to the computer, or are you working with the files off the disk?
Well, I put the disk into the second computer.
Right, but have you copied the files to the hard drive?
No, I don't copy everything to the hard drive.
All right, here's your problem.
Mm-hmm.
The reason this used to work on floppy disks was because, you know, floppy disks were essentially a repeated rewriting medium, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's not the case with your CDs. When you burn that CD, depending on how you burn it, when you burn that CD, that's permanent. and you generally can't modify those files.
But this is the RW CD.
Right.
Rewritable.
Right. But what you need to do is check and see and make sure you're burning. Just because it's a rewritable CD
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean that you've necessarily burned that session in a rewritable fashion.
Oh.
You may have burned it there permanently. That's what it sounds like to me.
A couple of things. I should mention something that maybe would help you a little bit in your analysis. When I've done two CDs now, initiated, formatted them on the new computer, and it takes a long time to format it.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised. I mean, it takes many minutes. And I thought, you know, when I format a floppy disk, it's just very quick and it's
right.
done. And I couldn't imagine why it took the new computer so long to, format that disk.
Right. So, and here's the thing, okay? So we've determined you're trying to do this off the disk, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that the disk isn't a CDR, just a CD-writable disk.
It's an RW.
That's a CD read-and-write disk.
Correct.
But still, depending on what... burning software you're using, when you burn one of those CD rewritable disks, okay,
mm-hmm.
it isn't like, when you change a file, you can just put it in, it's not like a floppy disk where you can change a file and just put it back on the disk. Generally, when they're talking about rewriting the disk, we're talking about, basically erasing the whole thing and rewriting the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
or substantial parts of it.
Yeah.
It's not set up to handle, generally, depending on how you do it, individual files
mm-hmm.
in that case. So that's the problem that I think you're having.
Yeah.
Now, my suggestion to you is, why not move the files over to your other hard drive, or do you just not want to have them on there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, I'm one who keeps very little... on my hard drive. I mean,
yeah.
years ago I had a hard drive crash, and they say,
right.
you know, they all crash. It's just a matter of when. And I guess I'm old-fashioned, but I really make use of floppy disk a lot. I get along fine with them.
Right.
And they
But they're dead.
but, you know, when I ordered this new Dell computer, they don't come with floppy standard anymore.
Right.
But for $40, they put a floppy in it at the time. And that's fine.
Well...
I'm trying to move into the 21st century,
right.
but these things aren't cooperating.
the bottom line is that CDRs and CDRWs, whether it's a permanent CD or a rewritable CD, don't function, for the most part, in the same way as old floppy disks used
yeah.
to. So either you want to move those files over to your hard drive and work with them from there, and then you could, you know, rewrite them back to the disk, do a session, clean the disk off, rewrite them back there. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's a little bit of a hassle, but not a great hassle. Now, I'll give you another alternative here. How old's your second computer?
It's about 2 years old.
Okay. So it's got up-to-date USB
ports
on it.
It's got a Celeron in it.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is all, you know, factory era. I purchased this stuff originally. It's all legal and everything.
Right.
It's got a nice big hard drive, it's got an Celeron in it.
I think that CDRs and CDRWs are great backup media, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But really, the replacement, what has become the replacement for the floppy drive is what's called a thumb drive, okay? A little USB thumb drive. And you can go to any electronic store these days and find these, you know, for not very much money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little solid-state hard drive.
Okay.
It doesn't have a spinning platter in there, but it's a little solid-state hard drive. Static memory so that it doesn't go away, you know, mm-hmm. when it's unplugged or without electricity. In other words, it'll hold the material indefinitely, basically.
Right.
And all you do is you plug that in to one of your USB ports that you have on either one of your computers, given mm-hmm. The age you're describing to me.
Yeah, they've got USB ports.
Right, right. And that'll just show up like another little drive, just like the floppy drive used to show up or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good way to store files and to shuttle them between computers in the manner you're describing and in the manner that we used to use floppy disks for.
Well, what do you think about this message I get? I don't have access to this, and it's your computer administrator.
I think that's just indicating that that those files are can't be written to.
Okay.
You know,
I've bought these computers new, and
right.
I'm the only one. My wife and I are the only ones that use them, as we're just
right.
you know self-employed. I am here on the farm and things, and so.
Now, would you do me a favor?
And,
My email address at the paper is Kline, K-L-I-N-E,
mm-hmm.
at news-gazette.com.
Mm-hmm.
And would you send me the text of that error message?
Okay.
And I'll look further into that.
Okay. One other quick question. If I save a file to the desktop, does that save on the hard drive, or that does not go onto the hard drive?
Yeah, it saves on the hard drive.
So
the desktop is really just another directory or folder on your computer, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's just the same as on the hard drive then.
Right. You just don't have it stored anywhere other than the directory you have it stored in is your desktop.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much for your help.
All right.
Good program.
Thank you.
Bye.
Let's talk with another listener. Next, we talk with a listener on line one. Hello.
Hi. Greg, the other day I opened my computer and the front page where you have all the icons and then at the bottom part you have a little bar with the start button and
right.
stuff at the bar. Well, what happened was there was only a few icons showing. The bar at the bottom was missing with the start button and get to the email and all that business. And I got a little message, and the thing said, this is how I read it. It said, display. There is a problem with your display settings. The adapter type is incorrect, or the current settings do not work with your hardware. And it had a little button where you could click on OK. Well, then I went to display property settings, and it just showed colors and screen area, and then it talked about 640 to 480 pixels, and I thought, well, I don't know what I'm doing here, so I'm just going to get out of this thing. So I closed it. So today I was going to call you and tell you how can I remedy this thing. So I turned the computer on, and everything's back to normal.
Right.
And you say, right. Well, what's going on?
You know, basically what you've got here is in highly technical terms, a little hiccup in Windows where you know it lost track of your video settings, right?
Oh, okay.
So now you've rebooted and it didn't hiccup this time and everything came back copacetic, right?
Well, I had actually I went to Control Alt Delete to then I turned the thing off, and then I restarted again, and I still had that about two or three times. Oh, this is nuts. I don't know what to do. And I knew you were coming on today.
Yeah.
So I was going to. So I turned the thing on, thinking I'd be able to explain all this stuff to you with the thing, and so it's a hiccup, huh?
Okay, so this may be different. You've restarted then several times, and this keeps happening?
Yeah.
And yet and now it's...
Now it's back to normal.
It's back to normal. Well, I wouldn't expect it to keep doing that repeatedly, although if it did it a couple times, I wouldn't necessarily find that surprising. Had you installed any software or downloaded anything before this started happening?
No.
None of that at all.
Not recently, anyway. So I thought, well, I'll talk to the expert and see. Because I thought, well, maybe something got messed up with the display settings. But everything's back to normal, so... So this happens every once in a while.
Yes, it's something that I found over the years just happens every once in a while.
And, called a hiccup.
I'm making that up. I've searched and never found a good answer. If anybody has one, I'd be happy to hear it. I think it's just an occasional glitch that occurs. You know, the computer will start up and it gets confused for some reason or another, right?
Yeah.
So you take it down and restart it, and things come back to normal.
Yeah.
And that's that's often the way it is.
Wow. I'll tell you what, I got real sweaty palms. Oh, I got a virus. Here we go again.
Well, if you haven't installed any software recently and you haven't downloaded anything, well, and you might have picked up something through email, I suppose.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
But do you have antivirus software on there?
Oh, yeah.
And do you run spyware, anti-spyware programs?
Yeah, I got Spyware.
Yeah.
I got SpyBot.
Yeah. So you should be okay. I think it's just one of those... occasional glitches that happen in something as complicated as a modern personal computer. One thing you might want to do is figure out what your video system is in there. Okay. You could probably see that, if you go to Start Accessories and go to the program System Tools.
Okay. Go to
just System Tools, the directory System Tools.
Tools. Yeah. Okay. Got it.
And System Information.
Got it.
If you bring that up, you'll find that there's a wealth of information in there that you can access in there about what's on your computer.
Uh huh.
And you can probably find the video system that you have. And it may tell you, or you can look up on the web, what the optimum settings for that are. So that if this happens to you again, you won't feel uncomfortable about opening up the setting control panel there and putting it back to normal if it's not.
I see. Well, it doesn't have videos. I just and system information is hardware, components, software, environment, Internet Explorer.
Yeah, you should Start Accessories, System Tools.
Yeah. I mean, I'm at the system information screen, and it gives me four things. Hardware resources, components, software, environment, Internet Explorer.
Yeah, do you have a little do you have a little plus out there?
Out of the side of those plus four? On each
of if them. If you click on that plus, you'll see that it comes down and shows you all sorts of subcategories, right?
And do I go under hardware?
Component? I'd go under. It looks to me like components, and if you look at there's a display in there.
Oh, okay.
It'll tell you the name. And the type of the video system, name and type of the video system, and it tells you the optimal resolution. So it says 8, and this particular one I'm looking at, it's 8x600x75 hertz. So those are all settings that are in your control panel, as you'll recall. And if you become familiar with that, then when this happens, you won't feel uncomfortable about putting it back the way it should be.
Oh, very good. Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Let's talk with another listener. Line 4, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I've heard you and Peter Kimmel on the radio a few times, and I understand that it's a wise thing to install SpyBot and Adaware to my computer.
I'd say so, yes.
And so I did download it months ago. I when I first got the computer, I had a number of concerns that I might have a virus, and so I downloaded it, but I did not install it because my kids essentially set this up for me, and they put a zone alarm on it.
Right.
And they said, since you really don't download things and you don't leave your computer on for long periods of time, probably you don't need this. Well, that was why I hesitated to download it. But it occurs to me, like, when I do go out and look on the web for things, like I've looked up medical things or something, all of a sudden in my inbox in my PuriNet system, I start getting these, I guess they just come into my email, and they are related to medical things.
Things that you've looked at, yeah.
They're not from that site, but they seem to be vaguely related to medical things. And I never used to get junk mail in my PuriNet system until
right.
I started doing this. So that makes me wonder, do I probably have some kind of virus, and that's what's making this stuff come into my inbox?
Well, I wouldn't go as far as to say, ma'am, that whether you've got a virus or even whether you've got any kind of permanent spyware on your computer, although it's possible. But let me walk through it this way, okay?
Uh-huh.
The zone alarm that your kids put in for you, that's a firewall. Okay, and the purpose of a firewall is to keep people from the outside from getting into your computer, from getting in there and poking around and you know, wreaking havoc or looking at your private stuff and that kind of thing. It also can be set to keep things from going out of your computer, so that if, for example, a piece of malicious software hijacks your computer and uses it to send out masses of junk email, right?
Uh-huh.
It may stop that from happening, okay? Mm-hmm. So it monitors what's coming in, and it's monitoring what's going out, and it tries to keep the bad guys out of your computer, okay? Now, that doesn't necessarily it can help, but it doesn't necessarily prevent you from getting viruses, and it doesn't necessarily prevent you from getting spyware and adware. Reason being, your firewall can't completely shut off access into and out of your computer. Otherwise, you can't use it on the internet, right?
Well,
so
yeah,
there are holes that it asks
me each time if I will allow it when I go to do
right.
something. Yeah.
And then when you allow it, it may allow it from then forth. That's one of the things that Zone Alarm will do, unless you tell it to keep asking. But the point is that it leaves holes open, okay? It has to, so that you can function on the internet. And viruses and spyware and adware can some of them can get through those holes, right?
Uh-huh.
Which is why even though you've got a firewall on there, you need to have antivirus software.
There's a Norton antivirus.
Right, right.
Okay.
And that's good. And then, you know, spyware and adware, some of them are related to viruses and some of them are virus-like, but they're generally a different class of software. And although Norton has enhanced its capturing of spyware and adware, you know, that's the stock and trade of Spybot, Search and Destroy, and Adaware that myself and I think Peter suggest. So really, you need that suite. Anymore, you need a suite of security programs like that. Now, if you're not online all the time, you're on a dial-up connection particularly, you may not really need the firewall. Doesn't
That's
hurt to
have. It's not a dial-up.
It's an always-on connection then.
Yeah. Like when I just do other things, it's apparently still on. I mean, if I just do word processing, apparently it's still connected.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if as long as your computer's on, unless you specifically go in and disconnect it, it'd still be connected. So it doesn't hurt to have the firewall if you've got an always-on connection like that. But you also need to have the antivirus software. You said you had Norton. That's good. And it also would be good to install Spybot and Adaware and run them. And they may, in fact, find some spyware and adware that is related to this problem you're having of getting medical-related email after visiting medical-related sites.
Okay. Now, the fact that I downloaded it months ago, is that one still good enough to install, and will it tell me to upgrade it if they change it like Norton does? I mean,
right. That's what I'll say about that. Is that none of these things, Norton or any other antivirus software, nor Spybot nor Adaware, are any good if you don't keep them up to date. And all of them, SpyBot and Adaware, just like Norton, include a feature that you'll see when you bring up the main screen there that says update this now. And they'll go out and get the latest version of the program. And more importantly, they'll go out and get the latest version of the definitions for this malicious software so that they can see and deal with it.
Okay. If I install them, will it mess up other things, that other settings will need to be changed that I will not know what to do?
It's not impossible that something like that might happen. You know, there's always some risk of that whenever you install anything, right? But it's been my experience, and, you know, I've installed SpyBot and Adaware on a number of machines at this point, and I've never had a problem with it. If you do the basic install and, you don't turn on all of the automatic monitoring features, which they're not on by default, and you just run a scan periodically, you should be fine. You shouldn't have any problem at all.
Okay. Is there a number that I can call or email to if I did have a problem?
Well, if you'd like to send it to me, I could look at it in the course of doing my column. And again, my email address is Kline, KLINE, at news-gazette.com.
All right, thank you.
And, you know, there's quite extensive information at the SpyBot and Adaware websites that can help you if you have an issue. There are things there that talk about what issues there might be. Although those are free, so unlike Norton, you know, you're not as likely to get, lots of technical support. But they do a pretty good job with their online knowledge bases.
Okay, so I should just go ahead and take the one that I've got downloaded and just install it.
Well, you've told me you have a live broadband connection there, so you know it wouldn't hurt you to. It's not going to take more than a couple minutes, so it wouldn't hurt you to go out and download the latest versions of those.
Okay.
So.
All right.
But I think you'd be fine with the ones you got, just as long as you update them once you install them.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, good luck. Let's talk with another caller this afternoon. It's Computers and You here on the Afternoon Magazine. We welcome back to the program today science and technology reporter for the News Gazette of Champaign-Urbana, Greg Kline. My name is Celeste Quinn, and we have another listener ready to go on line one. Hello.
Hi. Mr. Kline, just a very short question, and I hope it's within your sphere of knowledge. I work at a local thrift shop, and I get quite often computer printers. Generally, people kind of dump them off. They're not open, but if they look good, we saw them. I saw a DeskJet, I believe it's 820C SE, and this is my question. I have a DeskJet 840C, but I don't know how much more life I'll get out of it, and the thought was in my mind I could possibly buy this one as a replacement. Would the DeskJet 820C SE, and again, I'm not exactly certain, but I believe those are the numbers that were on it, be compatible with a compact computer?
Off the top of my head now, I'm not completely familiar with every model of printer, right?
Uh-huh.
But the way you're describing it, that sounds to me like, they're right there in the same generation, okay?
Uh-huh.
One would probably had a little more features than another. Maybe your 840 had a little more features than that 820.
Yeah, okay, it looks like it, and I sort of changed my mind, but I just wanted to.
But really, you shouldn't have any problem. If you can use the 840, you shouldn't have any problem using that 820. The issue you may have or may not have is, do you have a driver for that other printer, the 820?
Uh-huh.
A driver, is a little piece of software that essentially your computer uses to talk to hardware that's attached to it, right?
Yes.
So it may be, what version of Windows are you running?
98
SE or?
I think so.
You think so? It may be, this was not as refined as it is now, but it may be that if you take that, if you unplugged your 840 and you plugged that 820 in and then started up your computer, it may be that Windows will see it, already has a driver, and it'll set it right up for you.
Uh-huh.
Right? It also may be that it doesn't, and you'll have to go out and get a driver. I assume that the user one you're thinking about buying, the disk isn't there, right?
The disk is not there.
No. So what I'd do first maybe is go to the HP website and look for where they have drivers for download there, and see if in fact they have a driver download for that model you're thinking about.
May I ask one more question? Just as a result of your explanation, I just get the sort of gut level feeling that I'd probably be better off just to buy a new one, because they're more technologically capable, and I think I'd be better than doing that in mind.
To me, it always depends on what you want to do with it.
Yeah.
You know,
mine is not super technical. I have a small business. I do some personal, but I like good quality printing that goes out, and sometimes I have a small apartment business, and I like to send out a lot of memos to persons regarding if they ask me about a late payment, I just send them a memo confirming the conversation or other things. That's my main concern, is it just looks professional and businesslike.
Well, it's certainly true that every generation of printers seems to have better print quality than the last, right? For less money, usually.
Yes, that's sort of my... could I just ask one final question?
Uh-huh.
I think I could probably get something in HP for $120, $140 range, which would be very good. Would that be a reasonable assumption?
Yeah, certainly. Particularly if you're just doing mostly text. You know, if you're going to do photos and images and, you know, maybe newsletters and you want them to look real nice, you may want to think about a nicer printer. But if you're just doing text, there's not the cheapest printer out there now, in my estimation, does a good job.
One more, and I promise I'll get off the list.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, for a thing that would do good photos or newsletters, are you looking at $200, $250 for a printer, more than that?
No, you could probably get a nice, a decent photo printer for that these days.
And Hewlett-Packard would be about as good as any?
Well, I'm not really going to any of the major brands
that.
I think are fine.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Too.
I apologize. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call. Good luck. Let's talk with another listener, line two. Hi.
Hi. I have a question. I think I have actually have two questions. One probably simple and one quite hard. I have a laptop computer. It's a hand-me-down from my son, and when he brought it to me in December, he set it up as a wireless, which was wonderful, and I got used to it, and then something happened, and I lost the wireless connection, and I can't figure out. I really am sort of illiterate about the wireless stuff, so I can't figure out how to get it reconnected. And in fact, when I boot it up, it says it's connected, but when I try to go to the internet or go to my email, I don't. So the simple question is, can I take it somewhere? Can they do it away from my... We have a, what's it called, wireless, not a hub, something like that.
Base station, yeah, or
yeah.
Hub, whatever. Yeah,
router. Yeah, in the house.
Uh-huh. And that's connected to your internet connection, I take it?
Yes, yeah. Yes. We have cable, a cable modem.
Uh-huh.
And no, but then we have the wireless. I don't know the terms. Anyway, so what I'm wondering is, if I take it somewhere, can they reconfigure it away from my own wireless connection? Does that make sense?
Well, they may be able to look at it and see if there's anything fairly obvious in the settings that might be causing this. Otherwise, they're probably better off where you're at, you know, and working with your base station router access point, whatever you want to call it, so that they can see, you know, what the settings are in there and that kind of thing. Okay.
Who
now,
does that,
what did you notice? Did you notice anything related to this suddenly not working anymore?
Well, it's complicated. One of my other sons, who in theory knows some of this, took the laptop up to try to do something with his computer, which was dying, and trying to download something. Anyway, and so after that is when I noticed it. And he tried to reconnect it, and he said he did everything that he knew to do, used the key, and just didn't reconnect. So I don't know. That doesn't explain much. That's why I think I need to have somebody else come look at it.
Let me ask you if you've tried this, okay? Have you... turned off the cable modem, okay?
Okay.
Let it, you know, sleep for a while, mm-hmm. so to okay. speak. Not very
another
long.
Another technical term.
Yeah, right. Another technical term. not very long, you know, 5-10 minutes, something like that, okay? And then bring it back on, okay?
Okay.
All right. And then start up your computer and see if things work properly, okay? It's been my experience, and I think the experience of other people I know who labor over this kind of stuff, that the first thing you want to do is to try this business, this power cycling business.
Yeah,
okay?
we've had to do that a lot when it was just connected to the cable modem, you know, so I got used to doing that.
Right.
But, and I don't know, maybe my son tried it, but I haven't, so I will try that.
So that might solve the problem.
No. If, in fact, I can't figure this all out, who's somebody who would come to your house?
Well, I know the cable company's not going to help you because
right. no,
they
I,
officially
I
don't support.
No,
although,
I
you know,
won't.
Everybody and their brother now has a wireless access point.
Right.
They officially don't
they
support
that. They make that
them.
Real clear.
Yeah. And if you'll – do you live in Champaign-Urbana?
Yes.
Yeah, if you'll go and look in the phone book under computer repairs,
mm-hmm.
there are a couple of guys listed under there that make like house calls.
Okay.
I think one of them is PC Physician or something like that, and there's another one. No, I'm not providing an endorsement here.
Right. Yeah.
but they happen to be people that I know that do make house calls, so
right.
to speak.
I've always had to take
for
our,
this kind of thing.
Yeah, the desktop's in someplace, so that's why.
Right.
I ask whether that's
you know, maybe that somebody, you know, you may be able to take it in someplace. They may be able to look at the settings and say, here's the problem, change something and get you back in business. But I think it's more likely that they're going to need to see the settings for your access point, too.
Is it common for wireless connections to kind of just get lost periodically?
I'd say it's not entirely uncommon.
No, so, I'm beginning to wonder how much I should like this wireless connection.
when it works beautifully,
it is, yeah.
right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I first started toying with it about as early as you could, and it was not very robust, let me say, at all at that point. And I think it's gotten progressively better to the point where, you know, it's pretty much good, but you know, you can run into problems just like you have.
Mm.
And as I said, you know, I periodically have a glitch like that. And 9 times out of 10, if I power cycle, you know, that solves the problem.
Okay. Well, thank you.
This is a PC, right?
Yeah, it's
a Windows
PC.
Machine,
yeah,
right?
It's a Dell laptop.
All right. I'd have another suggestion for you if it was a Mac, but since it's
oh,
a PC.
Oh, okay.
Hey, before you hang up, I'm just – this is off the top of my head because I don't know what I'm talking about here, really, but you know, all through the community, there are places where you can go, and they have, you know, wireless access. Would that be of assistance in terms of it letting her know if she had a computer problem or if it was?
Yeah, it might be. If you went to like one of the coffee shops where you can get a cup of coffee and get on the internet.
Oh.
And see if your computer will see
and
hook up to their access point, then that might tell you something about whether it's in the machine or in the access point.
Hmm. Yeah, I think there's one in Urbana. They're
pretty much all over the country.
Yeah, I never go anywhere. I mean, I just started this, you know, wireless stuff. Usually I'm just stuck at home with the computer.
Well, I try the power cycling thing first and
first.
see if that gets something done.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right.
Okay. Thanks for the call this afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Greg Klein is with us this afternoon from the News Gazette. My name is Celeste Quinn. It's Computers and You here today on the Afternoon Magazine. It's a program we do on the third Thursday of the month here on AM 580. We've got about 5 minutes left. If we had a person call in pretty quickly here, we could probably get one more call in if it wasn't too complicated. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, what do you think of the new operating system that Apple is about to launch? I think it comes out near the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
Tiger?
Mm-hmm. Should be out pretty soon. Well, I think it I think it'll be another incremental improvement over the path they've been on with System 10 here, and that it will have some kind of interesting things in it. The big feature is the thing that Microsoft is soon to get into, and folks like Google are also getting into, is desktop search. Where essentially, you don't have to organize, the theory is, you won't have to organize all those documents you have anymore into folders and subfolders and all of that to find them, because this desktop search tool will let you find anything universally on your computer, from email to photos. Well, is it going to work that way from the very beginning? No, I don't think so. but eventually, I think it'll be an improvement, and I think eventually they'll get there.
Okay.
And the other thing is something called Dashboard, which is kind of a thing Apple has built so that you can put little mini programs on your computer to do all kinds of interesting things, like show you the weather and things of that nature.
Okay,
stocks and...
Let's squeeze in one more caller here this afternoon, and that will be the listener on line one. Good afternoon.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I've got a Mac, my wife has a Mac, and her printer quit working on it, and it won't print anything. Now, I put the printer up to another printer or computer, and it works fine.
Uh-huh.
And I've reinstalled the software for the printer drivers.
Right.
From the disk, and it still doesn't work. I get it like an error code 43, which I can't really find out, but nothing works on, it just won't go over and read. Whenever I say print, it just says error code.
What system are you running?
10.1, I think.
10.1. And what did you see when it stopped working? Were there any?
Nothing.
Nothing.
I'm not sure. She just said my printer doesn't work anymore. Take a look.
Okay. And so the error she gets is error 43 then.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you've tried. Have you, what kind of printer is it?
It's an Epson 800C.
You know, what I might do is go out to Epson's website, okay?
Uh-huh.
Try and find the place where they have downloads for drivers. Download the latest driver, particularly if they have a newer one, for the 800C. And try putting that in and then reinstalling your computer or your printer, sorry.
Okay.
So give that a try. And if it doesn't work, send me an email and I'll look into that for my column.
Oh, okay.
And again, it's Kline, KLINE, at news-gazette.com.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Good luck.
Appreciate it.
I think we can squeeze one more in. We'll have to be quick, though. Line two, go ahead.
Howdy.
Hi.
I just had a comment about the wireless problem that the person
uh-huh.
had a while ago. I deal with this a lot. Greg might recognize my voice. He might not. The number one problem that causes it to say it's connected but not be connected, assuming that the resetting of the cable modem doesn't bring it back up, is for the encryption keys to be different in the laptop and on the access point.
Right.
Most access points will say that they're connected to you because they're connected at one level, even though the encryption keys do not match, so no communication can go on. So
yeah.
If she doesn't have luck resetting the cable modem, she should probably try resetting the access point to its factory settings.
Yeah, that's good. And then she'll, which probably won't have any encryption, so she'll
right.
need to get somebody to help her with that to restore the protection that that allows her. But that's a good point. She said that her son, when he messed around with it, redid the keys, and I assume that to mean that he had put the proper ones back in there. But it's quite possible that he didn't.
Right. Unfortunately, knowing whether it's proper or not. The access point doesn't give you much of a clue to whether you did a typo or not.
Is this Mark?
No, this is actually Peter.
Oh, hi, Peter. How are you?
Pretty good.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
My pleasure.
Okay. Well, that's a nice note to end on. Hopefully gives us some help for the caller.
Let me give my blog address.
Okay.
It's Mr. Greg's Musings. Don't make fun of the name. No apostrophe in Mr. Greg's, .blogspot, spelled just like it sounds, .com.
Okay.
So You can take a look at it and see if I'm doing any good.
Okay. And Greg, he writes a couple of columns for the newspaper in addition to being a reporter for the paper about computing. They run on Mondays in the circuit section of the paper. One is a question and answer column, the other a column featuring interesting websites. We'll see you in June, huh?
Yeah.
How about that? Okay. Computers and You next month. Peter Kimball will be with us on the third Thursday of the month, and Greg Klein will return in June on the third Thursday of the month. 9 minutes before 2 o'clock, settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thanks much, Celeste. From the Chicago Board of Trade this afternoon, futures in the bean pit rallying today. That said to be on oil, as there was a report out of Canada that canola seedings were down, 8.1% or something thereabouts. So the oil rallied on the oil seeds, and that pushed the soybeans up just a bit today, anywhere between 5 3/4 higher, and the FAR deferred to nearby is up 7 cents. We'll take a complete look at those in just a moment. We'll also talk with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. Have a bit of a discussion with him about this bean market and what that all might mean in the longer term. Of course, most of our analysts are unsure of what the bean market might do and say that it's simply going to be quite a volatile spring and summer for that particular marketplace. Dan, on the technical side, I think, is probably a little more absolute in what he thinks is going to happen, but we'll discuss that with him during the closing market report at 6 after the hour. And then about 20:25 after the hour, we'll talk with Park Wilde. It is Ag Policy Radio Thursday here, thanks to Celeste Quinn and company, that they have given up some time for us to take up a Farm Bill 2007 debate. Today we'll take up the food nutrition programs. Those are probably programs that many producers and most others are not all that familiar with and how they work. How much money they cost, and how they move into the Farm Bill debate. We'll talk about that with Park Wilde. He is with Tufts University. That comes up at about 20 after this hour this afternoon, and we will be open for your phone calls at that time. From the Chicago Board of Trade now, futures in the wheat pit for the day were up 0.25 cents in the nearby May contract. 312.5 was the high on the day, the low at 308 3/4. Their settlement price at 311, once again up 0.25 cents for the May wheat. Soft red winter wheat July contract, harvest month, 322.5, the high, the low at 18 3/4, and a settlement price at $3.20 3/4 cents. They were down 0.25 for the day. September futures were up 0.5, 329.5, the high, the low at 26 1/4. Settlement price at 328 1/2, up 0.5 cents for the September wheat futures. December contract now, 339.5, the high, the low at 336.5, settled 338 1/4, up 0.75 cents. And March futures were up 0.01. At 347 on their settlement price. That was their high price for the day as well. The low at 345 in the March wheat from the Chicago Board of Trade. In the corn pit today, the nearby May contract, 211.5, the high, the low at 209. The lead options settled 211 1/4. They were up 0.5 cents for the day. July futures, 220, the high, the low at 217 1/4. Settled 219.5, up 0.5. And September futures in the corn pit, 227, the high, the low at 224 1/4. Settlement price there at 226.5, up 3/4 for the day. December contract now, 236 1/4 high, low at 233 1/4. Settlement price 235 3/4, up 1. And the March corn, 242 3/4, the high. The low at 40.5, settled 42 1/4, up 0.5 cents. May futures in the corn pit, 246.5, the high, the low at 244.5. Settled at 246 1/4, and they were up 3/4 for the day. From the oat pit, the nearby May contract, a 154.5 high, low at 152.5, and a settlement price there at 153.5, down 2.5 in July futures. 153 3/4 in the oat pit for the high, the low at 150.5, and July oats settled 152 3/4. They were down 2 cents for the day. May soybeans, nearby lead option, 639.5, the high, the low at $6.28, settled 637 3/4, and they were up 7 cents on the day. July futures were up 6 1/4. Their high, 648, the low at 36, and a settlement price at $6.45 1/4. Once again, the July settled up 6 1/4 for the day. August futures now, 646, the high, the low at 635, settled 643 3/4. They were up 6.5, and the Septembers were up 5 3/4. 639, the high, the low at 630 even. September soybeans settling the day at 636 3/4, up 5 3/4. November futures, this is your harvest month. New crop, 634 the high, the low at 625, the red November at 631.5 on a settlement price up 5.25. January soybeans up 5.75 today, the high 634, low at 628.5, their settlement at 633.25. Bean meal futures now 197.10 the high, the low at 194, settlement price at 196.90, they were up 210. And July futures 197.80 the high, the low at 194.10, settlement price at 196.70, they were up 140. From the bean oil pit, this is said to have led the market higher, but not a particularly wide trading range for the day. 23.02 the high, low at 22.60, and a settlement price at 22.95, at least not wide if they're leading the marketplace. Up 29 for the day. And July futures, 23.23 the high, the low at 22.80, and the July soybean oil, 23.18, finished up 31 for the day. Celeste Quinn is here now. She has a look at the Mercantile Exchange.
Livestock prices were lower today, Todd, the only exception being April live cattle. That contract was up 30 cents. April feeder cattle, 110.70, the high 110.30, the low 110.37.5, the settlement, that down 57.5. May 107.12.5, the high 106.35, the low, the settlement 106.60, down 47.5. August 108.65 the high, 107.67.5 the low, the settlement 107.72.5, that down 50. April live cattle, the high 91.70, the low 90.80, finishing at 91.40, again that up 30. June 86 even the high, 85.25 the low, 85.45 the settlement, that down 7.5. May lean hogs, 75.50 the high, 74.55 the low, 75.27.5 the settlement, that down 27.5. June 78.25 the high, 77.30 the low, 77.47.5 the settlement, that down 90. July 78.45 the high, the low 77.65, finishing at 77.97.5, down 62.5. August lean hog 76.20 the high, the low 75.40, the settlement 75.75, that down 50. May bellies down 180 today, 85.05 the high, the low 83.05, the settlement 83.45, again that down 180. The Dow up 179 points at 10,191, the NASDAQ up 42 points at 1956, the S&P 500 19 higher at 1157.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Tom Dilla from Juneau, Alaska writes, Dear Dr. Science, why does my computer hate me?
Why shouldn't it? What have you ever done for it besides plug it in and pound its keyboard? Your computer's poor opinion of you began with simple contempt. It's smarter than you and free from the unconscious motivations and subconscious conflicts that handicap you from taking effective action. The hatred began when you went on.